Heyo, welcome everyone to Today in the Scene by Indie Arcade Wave. I'm Joe, your host, and here on In the Scene, we dive into what's happening in the arcade space from general operators, arcade owners, and indie arcade developers. I've been a part of the Galactic Battleground team for about 5 years now. We've been showing it at conventions all over the country, and we have our Interstellar 35 tour coming up here where we're going down to Texas and hitting a whole bunch of arcades in 2 weeks. I just want to jump to this week's episode, and I'm really excited to have Rachel back on, and now I've got Kale coming too from Electric Bat down in Arizona. They have a really unique model for an arcade. They kind of found a tap house and then brought some pinballs in, and it just exploded. I mean, I feel like they've got to be three times the size they were the last time I spoke with Rachel. So let's bring them in and see how they're doing. How you guys doing?
Hey, nice to see you again. Good to be back.
What's up, Jeff?
It's nice to meet you, Kale, and it's awesome to speak to you again, Rachel. The bat is huge. It's all over my social media. It's like I see it every time I open Instagram or TikTok. I'm happy to see it, and I really enjoy the podcast too. So I think I just covered a lot of stuff there. So let's just go back and just introduce yourselves. Let the people know who you are.
Thank you. I'm Rachel, and I started Electric Bat Arcade.
And I am Kale. And I got into the industry first at Marco Specialties selling pinball parts, and that's where I met Rachel and joined her on this adventure of building this amazing arcade, Electric Bat Arcade.
There you have it.
Simple, easy. Let's talk about the collection, because I remember we spoke a little bit last time, Rachel, about how you started collecting pinballs, and I know Kale's come in, and there's been a lot more collecting ever since, but how did that start, and how has your collection changed from like when you were collecting it for yourself to now you're collecting it for the arcade?
Well, it started kind of the same way a lot of people start. I started with a MAME cabinet, and then it moved into pinball, and then it very quickly multiplied. As far as how what games we buy now, we still just buy the games that we want. We don't really think about it too much. In terms of money or not money, we do think a little bit more now, I think, about what games would be good for tournaments because we have so many pinball tournaments. Mm-hmm. And right now we have 60 pinball machines on the floor, and we need all of them for our pinball tournaments. So we do like to have good tournament players. Do you have anything else about that, Kale, you think?
Or? No, I think that about nailed it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So how did the arcade start? Obviously, like, you had this collection already, Rachel, and you guys started to build the arcade just like off of the tap house. And how is growing the arcade at this point?
Yeah. So when we first started a little over 5 years ago, it was just they had what was an office space, and it held 13 pinball machines and maybe 10 upright arcade cabinets. Right. And
I think it's important to say they is Yucca Tap Room, is a gosh, what, a 50-year-old?
It's over 50 years old now. Yeah.
Yeah. A dive bar. It's been here in Tempe for a long, long time. And the owners, actually, they had to hunt Rachel down. she was at first was like, I don't know if I want to take on an endeavor like creating an arcade. She just wanted to keep doing her art and doing her own things, pursuing other hobbies and just like playing, you know, arcade games and pinball machines. And so they really had to corner her at, well, it was ZapCon 1 year, right?
It was, yeah.
But the arcade and pinball convention in Mesa, Arizona, ZapCon. So they cornered you and got a meeting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they asked me to, I said I would help them do it. Mm-hmm. And then I met with them and let them know kind of what I thought would be involved, both money-wise and work-wise. And they wanted no part of doing that. So they kind of asked me, and I said no. And then they asked me again, and eventually I said yes. And so that's how we ended up with it.
I think it's pretty funny that they had to corner you at a convention to get you to even really consider it, because obviously these machines are yours, you love them, and you don't want them to get broken or anything, and that happens with an arcade. I don't think we ever really covered it, Kale. How did you get into pinball? Like, I know you worked at Marco. I've heard you mention it plenty of times that you worked at Marco, but like, how did you get started? Where was the first like pinball experience that you had?
Well, first pinball experience as a player, I remember when I was a little kid, one of our neighbors had a machine in their garage, and then they lived on my street. And man, this was probably like, it may have even been an EM, it sort of felt like maybe it was like an Evel Knievel or something. Wasn't that EM?
Yeah, that could
solid
be.
State?
Yep.
But then of course I didn't play. I didn't really get into playing until high school, when Adam's Family, Twilight Zone, Judge Dredd, Indiana Jones, all of those pins came out. The boom of the 90s, early 90s. We used to go. I lived in Lexington, South Carolina, which is where Marco Specialties is actually located. A lot of people think Marco is like in Chicago somewhere. No, it's in a very rural area of South Carolina, right near where I grew up. We used to play a lot of pinball in two places. There was a sandwich shop where we would play a lot of pinball, and there was a weird little shady like gambling place. it was legal, but the video gambling was legal back then in South Carolina, and they had pinball in there. I remember we would play pinball and Neo Geo all day long. It was like super cheap because they were just making money off the gambling. But then after that, you got to remember, I grew up in a very rural area. Once pinball died and the arcades kind of died, me and my friends thought pinball was done. We had no idea. Stern, which was the lone manufacturer at the time, was still pumping out these machines. We had no clue until I started working at Marco Specialties. And the weird thing was, a friend of mine met the folks that owned Marco Specialties, and they said they were looking for some help. And maybe somebody in the graphic design field, that's what I did for many years. And so I went in for an interview, met with the whole company. It was very small at the time and very easy to meet with the whole company.
They all fit at a table back then.
It's a whole different deal now. And so I went in there, interviewed with them. And I think it was like 2 days later, they called me and told me to come in. And I started recreating pinball graphics for them for, you know, like, old pinball decals and side art, cabinet art, and all that good stuff. And then I started selling parts, doing customer service there. And and that's actually how I met Rachel. Rachel worked remotely. She worked for Marco Specialties, actually from here.
Yeah, right? On an airplane all over the country at shows. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love the. That you got into it and you were playing in what you call a shady gambling hall. They can be legal and still feel shady. It doesn't have to be illegal to feel shady. It's all about who's running the place, really. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Let's talk about community. Community is massive for you guys. If I remember correctly, you held like the largest pinball tournament in the country or something like that pretty recently. So let's talk about building the community and the kinds of tournaments you guys run.
Yeah, so it's actually, we run the largest single location pinball league in the entire world. It's where you can get a ton of Whopper points, which are these are the points that competitive pinball people are really into. They like to collect these points, and it goes toward your world ranking. But as far as community goes, that's key. It's really key in building any business, but it just seems just to go hand in hand with arcades, because you know, back before the internet, this is where we all met to hang out. You know, if you you wanted to know where I was. I was at Showbiz Pizza or Saturn Video. That's the shady gambling joint. But but this is, you know, before we had even cell phones, it was like, find me at the arcade. Yeah. You know, where's Kale? Where's Rachel? We're at the arcade. And we just kind of, you know, you rolled that into today, where it's so much easier to find people with like interests, you know, like wanting to play games. And so, you know, we just using social media, it has helped a lot to pump, you know, what we have going on here.
And that's all Kale.
Yeah.
When you see stuff on the internet about Electric Bat, it is 99.8% something Kale did.
Yeah. And the other small percentage is
like, I get like a wild idea and do something.
Yeah. But in the arcade space, community is key. This is what it's all about, getting together. And I'm into online gaming too. I play all kinds of gaming from home with friends, but nothing beats getting together and talking to people face to face, looking people in the eye and competing, having a great time, having a cold beer if you're into that. But that's what it's all about, like getting together and sharing this experience face to face with people.
Making a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that's one of my favorite things that I've had from the community is like meeting people, making friends, and then just like having reoccurring visits with them. It's like some of the people that also have developed indie games with me, like I only see them at conventions. So it's just like mm-hmm. a fun time to see friends that you only really see in that space, and you stay in touch, but it's like that you know you have like 3 or 4 days to like hang out and play as many games as you can. Like,
yeah, and 100%.
It's fun when you're showing off your game too. So the Electric Batcast, I know that's been big. You guys have been doing some episodes. It's really cool to see. Like I get to touch on arcades here and there. I don't really get to deep dive like you guys do, and especially with like a pinball location. So let's talk a little bit about like how the Electric Batcast happened and what you guys talk about on the show.
Okay. So it started with we were guests on a pinball podcast called The Pinball Party, and we became really close friends with Jason, and he noticed it also, and we noticed that there were no operators, pinball operators specifically, talking about what they did and tips and tricks and.
I think it's fair to say operators, period. Like no operators are talking at all.
Yeah, it was all hobbyists and mm-hmm. fans, and that was 100% of the viewpoints were just based on that. But you know, I guess it started on my birthday. You just decided that for my birthday we were going to do a podcast.
Yeah. I set up. We had gear, audio and audio visual gear from streaming pinball. So I set it all up. And pulled out the laptop, and I said, "You know, Rachel, let's do a pinball podcast.
We're podcasters. Now.
We had no notes. I mean, it's all off the cuff. And at the time, Jason, who does a pinball party podcast, he was thinking of getting out of. He was getting busy with work and was thinking of getting out of podcasting. So he didn't do anything for a while, and the fans were asking for more of us. So we got into it, and one important thing that people kept telling us, you know, like we've already mentioned, there aren't many operators podcasting. There's a couple of more now.
Wedgehead. They got into. We love Wedgehead anyway, so right. It was really cool to hear.
And that's a great pinball arcade. Now mm-hmm. they have a podcast. They talk about pinball history and operating. Mm-hmm. But the what we kept hearing from the audience was it was so refreshing, because most all of the other pinball podcasts are rumors and news, and that can get like super old, right? Especially news. If you have the internet, it's out there. And you know, people get kind of tired of the same old thing, just rumors, news, you know, and the pinball world. And we get down to like the nuts and bolts, and we're very open with everything. We do an earnings report. We take questions
from
the
basically anything
listeners.
From anybody.
Yeah.
We don't keep secrets.
Right. And we want people to take this information, and hopefully it'll help them create an arcade. We want to turn fans into pinball owners, into people who want to get in the business and route machines and get these machines back on the streets. Whether you just have a location where you just have one or two machines, or if you're doing something like we're doing, where you have 60 plus machines in a venue.
We're in our office right now, so you can see behind us. We've got a Centaur, a Cleopatra, Tales from the Crypt.
Yep.
It's a bunch more over there.
And a fan.
Oh, a fan. yeah, so that's we like to tell people the behind the scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, it's always interesting to see anything. Like it could be a bagel shop. I want to see, you know, how the bagels get made.
Right.
So pinball is just one more thing for people to learn about how owning an arcade actually, like what it actually is. Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. I mean, there's so much about, I mean, obviously, like, you get a rumor of a Stern pinball, and that's, like, the news for 2-3 months. It's like,
right,
what's next? Like, what's actually happening here? And it's really cool to see you guys break down your earnings. So I guess the next question I wanted to ask, which I don't know, you guys probably already know this because you look regularly, but if somebody were to start an arcade, what are five games that you would be like, you need to have this on the floor to make money, and five games to avoid because either they're a headache or they don't earn?
Games that you would want to have on the floor, Godzilla would be the first thing that I would say.
Godzilla, the pinball machine.
Yes, the pinball machine by Stern, not right, the right. Sega one.
Yeah.
I would say, man, right now Elton John is killing it for us. That's a fun one, but that may not be one you should.
Right, right.
That's kind of niche, maybe.
It is new. It hasn't been tested as far as earnings go, but
right.
it's out earning everything. Yeah. So if we were creating an arcade from scratch, you'd want to have the Godzilla as
Definitely.
Far as pins go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Attack from Mars, because it's not classic Bally,
well,
90s. Right?
You'd 90s. Say like something 90s era, but specifically either Attack from Mars or Medieval Madness. I would
right.
say one of those
right.
two.
And then on the video game side.
Or Addams Family.
Oh, Addams Family, right. And then, so on the video game side, you want we found a Miss Pac.
Miss Pac Galaga.
Yeah, the combo. Mm-hmm. That is a great earning pin. And you just put it on a
Arcade.
Quarter. Yeah, I'm sorry, video game. and just you put that on a quarter, that keeps people there, throwing a quarter is cheap. And then I think it's important to have a sit down driver. Those always make a lot of money.
And a shooter.
And then a shooter. Right. Mm-hmm. So two pins, Miss Pac, Galaga, what else did I say?
A driver.
Yeah, there you go. A sit down driver. And then a shooter. Like Area 51 is great. And then we have a more modern alien
Armageddon.
Yeah. That was that's
gigantic.
A shooter with gigantic machine guns and what have you. I think that'd be a great start to an arcade.
Yeah. Stuff that I would avoid. I would avoid the upright games like 720 that people think that they want.
Mm-hmm.
They're very expensive. They're kind of they don't earn what you think they would earn. So I would avoid that whole category. There's a whole class of stand-up arcades that people have a lot of nostalgia for, and then people do come in and play those games once or twice, but those quarters don't add up. They don't have the staying power, and people don't want to play those games as many times as you would think that they would. Pinball machines, I would stay away from.
Probably any spooky.
Yeah, those games don't. They've got some great licenses, but man, they're.
And to be clear, for people that don't know, we're talking
pinball.
About more of the boutique pinball companies like Spooky. And what other ones are there? There's some, but anyway, the Spooky's a small shop that is known for making unreliable pinball machines. So
we carry them.
They get very cool licenses. like Scooby-Doo, Rick and Morty, and they're cool. We roll the dice and throw them on the floor, and they always end up, you know, screwing us. But we're big enough to where we can absorb a loss like that. I wouldn't start out with something like
that.
I would stick with Stearns or
Stearns, Bally Williams, or remakes of those. Mm-hmm. Yeah, are just going to be much more reliable. Reliability would be what you would, I think, be looking for if you were just mm-hmm. starting an arcade.
100%. Yeah, I agree. I think I've heard some things about Spooky. I love the licenses. I think they're really cool and they're fun to play. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that they have some issues.
Hopefully, though, you know. Get past that.
I think you nailed the five. I mean, Godzilla. Since Rachel, when you said that was your favorite game, I didn't believe you. And then I played it, and it is so much fun. It's like for sure my favorite pinball now. Galaga is a huge one. I mean, that was inspiration for Galactic Battleground. It's why we made the game. Area 51, awesome shout out, favorite shooter of all time. And the driving game I always see is Hydro Thunder. Like I think it's
man,
it's
a, that is
so much fun.
That is my top game. I love Hydro Thunder. Me and my best friend used to play. Back home in South Carolina, we had a Kroger. It was a grocery store.
Yep,
I don't know if
yep.
you guys are familiar with that. But they had a Hydro Thunder. And I threw hundreds of dollars in that machine. It was just
You're
insane.
You're kidding me. No, they had a Hydro Thunder at Kroger?
Yes. We loved it.
I've been hearing some weird stuff. I posted a video of X-Men on my TikTok, and people were like, we had it at the YMCA. We had it at the grocery store. We had it at all these different places. I was like, really? That's interesting. They had it at the YMCA. Aren't you supposed to like work out there or something?
Right.
I'm curious about what you guys have on the floor. Like, we talked about the arcade a little bit, how it started, mm-hmm. but what games do you guys actually have there?
Wow. Right now there's roughly 75 games on the floor. Mm-hmm. I don't guess we want to list them, but we can group them. A whole bunch of new Stearns, including James Bond 60th Anniversary Edition. Mm-hmm. We have a handful, maybe four or five Jersey Jack games.
Right.
The most recent ones of those.
Elton John. Most recent one. That is, if anybody gets a chance to play that one, that is a real, really awesome game.
It's a lot of fun. It's made by mm-hmm. Steve Ritchie. You don't have to like Elton John to enjoy this game.
I
am not a Elton John fan, although now it's growing on me mm-hmm. hearing it all the time, and the game is so fun.
Right.
We have a lot of classic pinball machines. So
rare stuff.
Some like, rare stuff, yeah.
Andromeda.
Yeah.
Stern Freefall. I mean, a lot of classic games you don't see everywhere. And then classic ballys, like your Nitro Ground Shaker.
Dolly
Parton. What's the truck one? The truck driving
Knight
game.
Rider.
Knight Rider, yeah. A lot of that stuff. And that's fun to keep running.
So late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as pinball machines go, we cover everything from like old stuff. We don't do any electromechanicals, so any solid states after that to the present as far as pinball machines go,
1978 and later.
Yep. And then for the video games, we have the Aliens Armageddon. Mm-hmm. That's probably the newest and biggest one we have. But our friend Chewy, and I don't even know all the names of all of them, but he
Japanese rhythm games.
Yeah,
we'll just encompass it with that. Lots of Japanese rhythm games that I am horrible at playing, but it's so much fun to watch people that are good at it. They're moving around mm-hmm. like faster than you and I could even think about. Like,
and then we have a few fighters, right? So we mm-hmm. have your Mortal Kombat 3.
Mm-hmm.
We have Street Fighter. Which one is that? Two.
Two.
And then a Tekken. I'm not sure which Tekken is. I'm not into video games anymore, so I don't even play those games, but I'm glad they're here.
He walks by it and sees Tekken Tag.
And then what?
So we have a handful of other classic uprights and stuff, but really we are primarily pinball machines.
Yeah.
We're about 60 pins. And then the rest is a mix of the Japanese rhythm games, shooters, classics.
We also have a bubble hockey.
Oh, yeah,
and
bubble hockey.
We cannot forget the amazing Suck It Up machine.
Our
friend Chewy that operates the Japanese rhythm games has a redemption machine called Suck It Up, where, you know,
it's like a claw machine.
Yeah, instead of a claw, it actually has like a, it's a little vacuum, and it sucks up the prizes and then drops it in the bin for you. And the coolest thing about that is he mounted a camera, a video camera on the inside. And so he captures,
if you win.
Video of you winning something. And it's so much fun. People will win because, you know, you never know you're going to win. And so the look is always, it's so intense. And then somebody, and then, and all of a sudden the prize starts lifting up and they start dancing. And we post a lot of those videos on our social media. Go check out at Electric Bat Arcade on Instagram. And we're also on TikTok, Electric Bat Arcade. And then you can also search for us on Facebook, Electric Bat Arcade.
Yeah, I see a bunch of those videos. I think they're really interesting to watch just because those people don't think they're going to win. You know, you step up to most production games like that and you don't think you're going to win.
Right, right. And it's those videos have been key in the earnings on that machine.
Yeah.
Everybody wants their video posted. So that's helped out a lot.
Also, now there's a television in the back of the machine. So it plays videos of other people winning. So you can see, like, this isn't a scam. If you line it up, it actually does pick up the prize and you win it. Mm-hmm. And that draws people in. But yeah, people love seeing themselves on the TV.
Definitely a good way to get people to play. I mean, when you show people winning, they think they can win, right? It's a little bit easier to get them to do that.
Yep.
Let's talk about indie games. Like, I know you guys may not have played a ton of them, but what do you think about the new indie games that are coming out and like the homebrew pinball scene? I know you saw some at the Chicago Pinball Expo. What do you think about that scene, and when are you guys going to make your own homebrew pinball?
Well,
I love seeing anything that somebody makes, right? Like, even if it's not good and it doesn't work, it's cool to see. You can see the idea and like what they were trying. Like, anytime anybody's trying something, you have a certain respect for the effort. And then sometimes they try stuff and it's really good. Like 8-Ball Beyond, is that what that was called?
Yep.
At Expo, that was an amazing pinball machine.
By Sean Irby.
Yes. And so that was a lot of fun. But then there was like this really quirky one, and I don't remember what it was called. The playfield was basically a whitewood, but in the back there was like all of these kind of mad scientist body part type that it would like just do this weird weird science type stuff. And that was just really interesting because I'd never seen anything like that in a pinball machine, and I'd love to see that like well integrated in a fun pinball machine.
Right. We used to see a lot of the indie video games when we would do the arcade and pinball conventions. We would travel to all of them.
Yeah.
Selling pinball machines and pinball parts. And we have actually gotten to, we don't play a lot of video games. Our friend Jordan at Danger Zone carries a ton of these indie games, and man, they are really impressive. Like
that's another arcade in Arizona attached to a brewery,
right?
I've had Jordan on here a couple times to talk to him. Jordan, he's got all of them.
I mean, yes, and I'm so happy somebody is doing that, because there are not enough places supporting the indie video game scene, and he's putting a lot of money into putting everyone out there. I think that his latest was Nidhogg. Is that the name of it?
That was the most recent one I saw.
And
him.
Man, what a super cool game!
Yeah, that was very cool. Yeah. We played that for a while.
We were thinking about getting one. I think we're starting to run out of room, but because we needed another shooter,
running out of room.
Nidhogg is awesome. I actually just had Dan on the show like a week or two ago. The guy that did that one.
Cool.
He's got a really cool business where he basically finds existing indie games. Nidhogg was huge. People already loved the game. And he brings the license, like he gets the license from the guy and then puts it into a cabinet. So he takes an existing game that's really good that everybody loves, like Switch and Shoot or Nidhogg, and puts it into a cabinet. And he actually just made his first solo game with one of the developers that made one of those games. And it's called Perfect Pour. So you're basically pouring beer as a bartender. Cool. It's a really
like
unique
Tapper?
Kind of like Tapper. It's a similar idea, but it's a little bit more precise about your pour as opposed to like getting as much out as possible.
Okay.
Interesting.
So that's another cool game. I think is the pinball you were talking about, is that the one that was versus? Like, I saw you guys playing against each other.
No, that was a different one. Was that cool. Was cool.
That one was sweet. Cool.
Yeah. I had a good time playing that.
Yeah. No, but the game she's talking about, I don't even remember the name of it, but it was like, it was so weird because where your back box would be on a traditional pinball machine, it was like the science experiment with like beakers.
Like a big glass cabinet with physical beakers. Yeah.
Almost
it had like,
felt like a mausoleum or something.
Yeah, and it had like pneumatic pumps and stuff. Like there was a lot of physical things happening in the background making, you know, the colored liquid bubble up and over and things.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it. Maybe somebody will, when this
somebody
comes out,
know.
Somebody can comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing a video of it. I think it was from Bob Rose, who made Token Taverns. I'm pretty sure I saw it. Like,
yes.
He had a full walkthrough of that and showed that game. And I think there was like a Tesla pinball too or something. There's a whole bunch of crazy stuff on that video that I thought looked really cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's really all I had for you guys. Just to wrap everything up, shout out to social medias, let people know where they can find you. And if you have any tournaments coming up or anything, shout those out.
Cool. Yeah, you can find us on Instagram at Electric Bat Arcade. Search for us on Facebook, Electric Bat Arcade. We're posting a little bit. We're not too heavy on TikTok, but we mess around there a little bit. You can find us there. And you can find us in person every Tuesday, every single Tuesday at 6:30 at Electric Bat Arcade in Tempe, Arizona.
That's league night.
Yeah, that's our league night. And if you want to keep up with the tournaments, you can go to electricbatarcade.com. And there's a link to our podcast. There's a link to our tools that we use. And there's a link to our entire schedule of all of our tournaments. So come out, hang out with us. And we're here every week.
Yeah, we're here almost every single day. Yep. So you'll probably run into us. We're open 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. 365 days a year. So we're basically never closed. And you'll probably see us if you're here.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, guys. I really appreciate it. Electric Bat is awesome. It's on my list. I'm going to make it down there eventually. I can't wait to see what you guys do with the podcast and with the arcade. But for anybody that's still watching, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. It helps us a ton. The scene will continue to grow and we can all ride the wave together. We've got the new Galactic Battleground cabinets, the upright and the four-player tabletop, as well as the t-shirts. So until next time, peace.
Thank you, Joe.